So, my parents and teachers, experts, it's your time. Come on up. I also wanted to recognize that we have two other partners, our Speak Up partners, that are here with us today, and I am thrilled to have representation here from ISTE and from PBS. So thank you, partners. Okay. So this is our mixed panel of expert teachers and parents. And let me introduce you to everyone that's here. This is Frances Villagrón Glover.
Right.
And Frances is here from Bull Run Middle School. Frances is a teacher at Bull Run Middle School, which is in Prince William County. But she's also a parent, hold on, of seven children. So she's holding both sides for us. She's going to talk on both sides. We have sitting next to her Rebecca Rawl, and she is Christian's mom. Next to her is Chuck Drake, who is from Forest Park High School. And then I have Tammy Drakeford, who is Candace's mom. Remember, Candace is from Forest Park High School. Tony Bellino is from Governor Thomas Johnson Middle School, teacher there. And then with him is Christina McIntyre, who is Sean's mom, who we met earlier. So this is our esteemed panel. Thank you so much for joining us. We're going to... Oh, and Brian. And Brian's in the back. Brian, roll yourself over. Bring your chair down, Brian, if you can. Or at least right there so that I won't forget that you're there. Brian Hackett is from Forest Park High School as well. Okay, I'm going to ask some general questions of them, and then I have a specific question for the parents and a specific question for the teachers. You know, one of the interesting findings was this idea of communications between parents and teachers. And it appeared that email was starting to become a very valuable tool. We know that there's other valuable tools as well. Schools are more and more getting into having some sort of portal or some sort of website where they're sharing information between students and between teachers and parents and students as well. So what I wanted to find out from this audience was from the parents, but also from the educators, the teachers that are on the panel, you know, what does that really mean in terms of communications between parents and teachers? Are the current systems effective? Would you like to see more of it? What have you found to be most effective in terms of your communication, either from parent to teacher or teacher to parent? Jump right in.
Well, in regards to communication at Bull Run Middle School, what we do is we communicate, I say on average, regularly with our parents via email with regards to progress reports and report cards. We also implemented lately, we found that the newsletters we were sending out, parents were throwing them in the trash. As a parent myself, I do the same. I just think it's junk and I throw it in the trash. We've implemented sending our newsletter through email, and that's what, according to your survey, mm-hmm. is consistent. They'd rather have something pushed down through email, a notice about school being closed early, a notice about an incident at school that may be concerned to them before, you know, Susie comes home and says, hey, guess what? Somebody brought a knife to school. The principal sent out a message regarding an incident. So I'd say the use of email and it's very effective.
Any other thoughts?
I would agree with her on the use of email because I get them at work. It's much easier
okay.
for me.
So you pick them up at work?
Yes, because that's where I'm at during the day if something
sure.
happens. So I get those through the email. If something happens in one of the schools, they send out a bulletin. I think that's it's a good
sure.
system.
Okay. Any other thoughts?
At the high school level, it's very different than at the middle school level because there is greater accountability on the part of the student. Mm-hmm. So what I have found, because now both of my children are in Forest Park, I've learned dramatically that it's more important for me to initiate contacts with the teachers. And because the teacher email addresses are very accessible for us, it's extremely convenient. I don't like, now that both of my children are in high school, really to think that I'm sort of shadowing them. But I do like to communicate with the teachers to let them know that I'm available to them if they have any questions or any concerns about what's going on.
Okay.
We've been using email for communication purposes for quite a while now. It was at our school level. We used to do an email blast program where we collected emails for parents, and they enjoyed it very much. And then the county followed suit with a county-wide email sign-up, and it's quite useful. The communications department really is able to get information out fast because in the age of cell phones and other things that students carry with them, if something happens, it's school, very often parents would be worried that they were hearing about it from their child before they heard about it from an unofficial source. So that really does help get parents information and make them feel confident that they're getting everything that they need to know about whatever school closing or some special event. So it's very, very useful.
From a parent standpoint, I'll be there in a moment, Jack. From a parent standpoint specifically, do you feel that you have a better connection with your child's school teacher because of technology, or has it universally, yes? Any thoughts on that, Christina?
I think she made a good point. I think it opens the door. I mean, from my parent head on, I have a middle schooler. I'm sorry, a fifth grader, a seventh grader, a ninth grader, an 11th grader, 12th grader, 3-year-old, and about to be 1-year-old. But anyway.
I'm tired hearing her talk.
I think it opens the door to communication. You made a point about you didn't want to make it seem like you were hovering over your child in high school. But in high school, you tend to want to back off as a parent and say, oh, he needs to be more independent, she needs to be more independent. But with email, it helps me say, you know, Mr. Drake, you know, my son's not doing too well. I see he got, you know, a C. Is there anything I need to do? Do I need to talk to him about it? So I think it opens the door a lot to communication.
Did you have a point, Christina?
Well, and one thing that was implemented this year also, not only do you get emails about events or things that could happen in school, I get notified about grades. Mm-hmm. People set triggers where anything less than...
You're in trouble, Sean.
And that instigates emails on my part or even the teacher part.
Now, we have a student perspective here. Mm-hmm. Candace?
We have something called school fusion, and like our teachers post assignments. This is a kind of annoying to me, but I guess it'll help the parents. But my mom gets emails when a teacher posts homework. So she comes to me, do you know? Yes, I got it. But, like, she always, like, she gets them at work or whatever, but because she, I guess, applies to the post. So every time a teacher posts something, she gets the email. And you find
that annoying.
It's annoying to me, but, like, I guess the information, it's helpful to her. But it's kind of annoying to me.
I've had this exact same comment from my own son, because I've got the same thing. I mean, a different program, but I also get it. Yeah, Brian.
On the other side of the perspective, though, we only have about 50% parents who sign up for email connection. And we know more parents have email addresses. A lot of it, I think nowadays when parents are starting to register for school, I think email addresses are going to be part of that. It'd be nice if almost with... like cell phones now, keep your cell phone. We had almost a nationalized email system. A parent could have an email address as they moved on. If you keep that email address, it'd be a lot easier for us to make that connection. I think parents would be able to, and we wouldn't be losing these email contacts throughout.
Right, we're having to redo it. Chuck, you had a point.
That was going to be part of my remark as well. It's the 50% rule. They sign up and the email is either entered incorrectly, or if you have a paper, the email is missing a letter in the wrong place. And then also the accountability issue has come to play a little bit, where as soon as you write something, it's written. Mm-hmm. So there's no longer the type of where you can kind of fuddle through an email and you have mistakes and so on. It's a much higher standard now in email. It's like writing a letter. Mm-hmm. In the old days where you take time and you make sure it's right. So many people are getting caught on that, on the grammatical and the errors. So teachers are fighting sometimes with that.
Hmm. One of the things that I think is important that we realize, though, that instant communication like email and instant messaging is really great to get small snippets of information, but still the most valuable tool with communicating with parents and teachers is still a phone call or a parent conference that are held regularly, because then you can get more in-depth conversation. And, of course, what you lose in email is sort of you get that... the facial expressions and feeling as well. We've actually looked at, in addition to our email system, a phone broadcast system, because we're trying to cover all our bases, and since more people do still have phones than have access to email, we thought that would be a good thing to look at, and we're still looking into that as a potential additional communication avenue. So hopefully we'll be able to adopt it.
Christian had a point.
The Pennsylvania County School System has a county-wide system called iToll, and basically you log in and it's usually the last name and then the first initial of the husband or the wife, and then the certain password they give you, or you can redo. and then you log in, you show all your students, and you click on them. And then from there, you go to, you get a basic grade summary. It's the average grade right there at that standpoint. And then you can click on the actual course, and then it gives you it gives you all the grades that there is. And so with that program, it's very easy to access. You go to the school's website, you click on iToll, and you're right there. You log in, and you got the grades right there. So whereas the grades, the communication is quicker with those programs, whereas the phone call, if they call the parent, the parent might not pick up. They might have rolls over to the answering machine, and so they might get it later. Or same thing as like information of early closing. Same thing with phone call. They might get it late, and then if the school, the child has been waiting at the school for 2 to 3 hours, waiting for the parent to come home and pick them up. So the email is very quick because. Whenever I get home, straight to the computer, click on email, I read all my emails I got for that day. Most of you and your jobs, you probably have the Outlook or whatever program you're using at the bottom opened and ready so you can click on it and pop it up and see if you got any new emails. So email is quick to get that snippet information that you need right away. Like you said, phone calling is still probably the number one way to communicate into in-depth. To get in-depth with more information.
Okay, so let me ask the question of the teachers and parents here that I also ask the students, which is along this idea of how well are we doing in terms of preparing these kids, the next generation, for the jobs and careers of the 21st century? What do you think your schools should be doing, either they are doing or should be doing, to make sure that the students that we have are being well prepared? What are the thoughts? Brian?
Well, I would actually, one of the points you put up there, I'm trying to make things relevant to the students and so forth. We really need to start to make our professional development relevant to teachers. Too often they're caught and trapped in a situation, first and second year teachers coming out of college, but they're so trapped in paperwork and accountability outside of the classroom that we're not giving them the real valuable assets of the time to be able to spend on relevant materials for the students. So we need to make professional development and services much more relevant. You know, teachers being allowed to choose where they go and how they, more collaborative work. Online collaboration is an enormous tool, not only for teachers taking master's and PhD programs now, but students are beginning to see that. And teachers are getting the opportunity to access that more. I think that will be a trickle-down effect. Once the teachers are more, then the students will be better prepared.
Good point.
I'd like to piggyback on that. Professional development, with all the demands on teachers' time, with all the accountability, and of course family demands, the amount of time that they can receive staff development is cut greatly during the school day. So creating maybe an electronic learning community or professional learning community online is a good way to have sort of give teachers an option to participate at when they have the extra time, which may or may not fit into the schedule. I also feel that we're still doing a lot of staff development where somebody gives a presentation, here's how you do this, now good luck. We need to have more professionals in schools who are able to help teachers and follow up with them on integrating the technology into the classroom and to make it real world. And I think, though, that the most important skill we give is to use technology to solve problems. And problem solving is incredibly important. Because the amount of information they need to know, we're literally preparing students today for jobs that don't exist. So it's really difficult to do that unless they have the good, solid problem-solving skills. And I think focusing using the technology as a tool to improve their ability to solve problems will be sort of a good way to ensure that they'll be able to tackle those challenges when they leave the school system.
How about from a parent perspective?
I would suggest to build on what Tony was saying. In the middle school, it seems like they're getting a lot of the basics and learning a lot of how to study, how to prepare themselves, how to move forward. And we just signed up for high school courses, too, where I've heard a couple comments about very individualized career paths. And I was surprised to see that at our high school as well. You know, Sean kind of knows what he wants to do, and they have a guided progression through the courses he needs to get there, which I found very encouraging.
That's very interesting.
To piggyback on that, it's a great idea, and something we're missing the boat, I think, unfortunately, in education, is that we are an institution of education, and we've grown up with this, that we teach the main core subjects and all these kinds of things. Where there's a disconnect is in the workforce. There's the workforce, they're showing up on time. There's all these things that chambers of commerce is all over the country need these kids to come into the workforce with certain skills. And what we're starting to do, I think, is a good direction, is that chambers of commerce, businesses, local businesses, are saying, here's our top 10. Mm-hmm. Here's what we need these kids to be able to do. And if we can start to change a little of what we do in the educational world, meld the two together, I think we'll be ahead of the game.
Okay. I could keep asking the questions. I have tons of questions because this is what I do. But I want to give everyone here an opportunity. Does anyone have a question for either our student panel or our teacher and parent panel? Doug?
I'm interested in exploring a bit of a disconnect that I saw in the data up here about sort of adult parent and teacher concerns about online safety and security and privacy, and then the perceptions of the students themselves about maybe not being as concerned about some of the same things as adults. Just hearing a little bit more about that disconnect and why you think that is so.
I think because the reason of that disconnect is because we're so integrated with technology, it's become literally second nature, and if not that, it's become our life, our livelihood. The first, you wake up, you grab your cell phone, when you get dressed, you grab your cell phone and you throw it in your pocket. Whereas when we go on the computer, the worry about of the websites being bad or something like that, we still worry about it, it's still there, but it's not right there in front of our brain. And so it's still there, and they might have answered to say, yes, it is very important for us. It is still important, and we still look for it, but it's just now we're doing everything so fast, we know what we're doing on the websites. We have reason to be there. We aren't going somewhere else. We aren't clicking on a random link. We know better not to click on the advertisements. We know better not to click onto the links that look suspicious. And so it's not a worry.
Candace?
I think the disconnect comes when, the two aren't educated on what one of the other is doing. Like, when MySpace first came out, my mom was like, no, get off of it now. That's no good. But, as we started explaining to her, what we were doing on there, and, as she got, more educated on what we were doing, we've pretty much opened up our page and was like, here, this is what I have here. I'm not doing anything wrong. She's not as against it now. She's still kind of against it. She checks up on us every so often. But now, she's more lenient to let us use it, just as long as, we're open to let her see what we're doing. I think that adults kind of catch the wrong end of MySpace. What you guys see on TV is some girl getting abducted because she put all her stuff out there. Whereas my mom's like, if you don't put this out there, nobody's going to. I mean, if you don't put all that information out there, then you shouldn't have a problem.
Well, we'll let the mom respond, and then it's on to your friends. I think Tammy's biting at the thing. Okay, Tammy.
I have two in high school, and one's very addicted to MySpace. Not this one. My other one is. And both girls. And I do. I go on and look at their MySpace pages. I look at all their pictures, who they've been talking to. I have a program that I can monitor MySpace now. And they know it's there, so I can go in, get passwords, everything I need to do for them. But security was a big issue for me because my youngest one, I found, was talking to people she did not know. You know, just because they said they went to Garfield High School,
Sure.
This person can be in another state somewhere, or they could be right down the street from you, they play sports, so their name has been in the paper. They have to be aware of stuff like that. And they have ways of getting around a lot of stuff, even if you block it. I blocked MySpace at one point. All you have to do is go to Netscape. It takes them right to MySpace, They find ways to get around that stuff. And so security is a big issue, as far as that.
I like to use analogy. When our children were young, we taught them how to cross the street. You look both ways. And I think a lot of us, educators and parents, we're doing the right thing. There's a lot of parents that are unaware and uneducated about issues like MySpace. We need to educate not only the parents, but the parents educate the children on the safety issues. You know, just don't let them turn on the computer and get on MySpace. But there are good things, like Candace said. My children were able to, we were stationed in New Orleans, Louisiana. We moved 5 days before Katrina hit. Really lucky. Through MySpace, they were able, and communication mediums like that, they were able to find friends that they could not find. They were able to find teachers. They were able to communicate with MySpace with their dad who was stationed in Iraq. So there are good things, but like you said, just need to educate.
Chris?
I think the parents tend to blow a lot of the internet predators way out of proportion, because the actual numbers of the amount of internet predators is a lot lower than the every 30-something stories you see on the news. That's just like the random stuff that just tends to happen, and they put it on the news because the news people think that's what that people want to hear about, but really, there isn't a whole lot of that going on. When I first got the internet gaming thing, my mom put, like, every single safety thing on it, and so it was just, I couldn't talk to anybody that didn't know her permission to get a new friend. It was just ridiculous, and when I showed her the, like, what I was actually doing, just talking to my friends and having a good time, she just slowly scaled it back, and I haven't met anyone crazy yet, and I've been on it for 3 years, so...
I'm going to give Max a shot, then we're over here, and then we're there.
Well, I was when they were talking about the MySpace thing, I was thinking about it, and, I mean, a lot of people, some people do, are a little naive about it, I guess, and they put their picture and their full name and where they live and how old they are, but a lot of people, I'm one of them, I make up a lot of that stuff. Like, my name, it doesn't say Max, it says whatever. And then for where I live, I just put a random place. I said Ashgabat, Turkmenistan. I just pointed to a random part of the map and said that's where I live.
And you're 104, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm
102.
You're 102.
And so I showed my mom my MySpace, and I showed her that there's nothing to worry about. But she always wants to check on my computer because I just got a new computer recently of my own. And so she's always checking on what I have on there, that I have nothing inappropriate. When I think about going back to the original question, the reason that I think students aren't as worried about, like, going to the bad pages and stuff because they don't really care that much. Because if I know a lot of kids in my school, if they were to go onto a page that their parents wouldn't want them to see, they'd probably be happy about it and they'd probably tell their friends. And their parents don't really know much about it. And so like what he said, they blow it out of proportion a little.
Brian?
I think back to your question. I think there's a legal responsibility teachers see, and I think there's political ramifications that parents also see with regards to what about, you know, proper websites and so forth. But I like the fact that the K through 12 is much lower, because that's basically telling us we're doing our job, because they're going on those sites and they're basically saying, you know, I'm not supposed to be here, and I'm not really worried about it because I've been told I'm not supposed to be here. There's a sense of responsibility rights that we've given these kids, and they're accepting responsibilities. And I think that's the big change of the 21st century student.
Tom?
I think the big thing is education. I think parents need to be educated, and parents need to educate their children about what is and what is not appropriate. Our school recently started implementing the iSafe program, which was funded through the Department of Ed and the Department of Justice. And it was surprising, the statistics that came out of there. For example, almost 20% of high school students have actually met somebody online that they didn't know previously. And a lot of that is there's a comfort level, as the students were saying, is they're the digital natives. They feel comfortable there. They don't see this any different being online than us sitting here speaking the way we're doing today. A lot of this information, they do smart things, like they don't give their information, personal information, but still many students do. The state of Michigan, state police barracks in the state of Michigan, their commander asked their troopers to go to MySpace, and they did, within an hour, they found dozens and dozens of profiles of students living in the community that they were able to track down. They actually went and knocked on the doors of the parents to say, this is what your child has on his or her MySpace account. So although we probably have the cream of the crop here who know better, there's still an awful lot of children out there that they may be too naive about what they can and can't put on. They feel that they're sitting in their house and that nobody can find them. But there are many, many, there are a great deal of predators out there, and they really do seek out in the internet, and so it is important to educate our children and to teach them what is a good thing to do and what is not such a good thing to do. And parents do need to be educated about that MySpace can be used for many wonderful things. Social networking sites in general are a great way for students to collaborate and communicate and work on all kinds of different things. So, and as Chris said, the media does tend to hype the bad things about it, but we also can't lose track of the good parts about it, too.
A group of kids have told me that their biggest fear is that their teachers are going to set up MySpace pages and make them go to them.
Yeah.
We have another question.
Deputy Secretary Simon mentioned that one of the turning points that he saw when he spoke with a lot of other teachers in turning around their schools was that they use data. And there are a lot of states building these data systems, but not necessarily pushing the data back down to the teachers or to parents or to students. So I was thinking, I'd like to hear from the parents and the students what you would think about those possibilities of being able for the students to log on and see how many credits you need until you graduate or where you are in terms of applying for college, what requirements you've already met, and for parents to be able to see, gosh, there, you know, my student is on target to get such and such a test score. I need to work on this and that. I was just curious to hear.
Okay.
We actually have that, like, at Forest Park with, like, he was talking about the Intent Online. You can log on, and you pretty much have, like, your whole high school profile there. And, like, you have the classes that you took 9th through 12th grade, the grade you finished there, what credits you still need to graduate, how many credits you already have, where you've sent your transcripts. I know one of our counselors, the career counselor, she just recently started us on this program where, like, you see where you've applied to, where you've been accepted, where you just recently put in a transcript request to. So, like, they're pretty much, like, I don't know how well they're doing this in other schools, but I know at my school, like, they're pretty much, like, giving us, like, a push saying, you're going to school, and, like, this is the information you need to get there.
And it's a program that you like and you think other students around the country would really benefit from it?
Mm-hmm.
Again, the aim with all programs is there's a downfall. With ITOL, it's not very, like, nice and pretty like that PowerPoint is. It's all colorful, and you see it catches your eye. ITOL is all black and white with a little bit of brown. And so, yeah. And so, basically, you click on it, and you see a lot of data tables, a lot of no... frequently asked questions, there's no explanations, there's no way to click on it. What in the world does this mean? So making programs that we already have and extending them on beyond their purpose, it makes it easier for the teacher and the student and the parent to understand what's happening. And it's not that hard to implement that stuff. It's more lines of code, more programming. Money is going to go; it's going to be spent. But is this money being spent for a good purpose? And is this money going to be returned back to us? Because when the kids graduate, did they go to a good college? And if they did go to a good college, did they get a great job after that? And now that they have a great job, they're paid. What they're getting paid is a higher amount than what they could have. And so now that money that they do have is getting sent back to the school through taxes and maybe through a donation, they might be a CEO of a company and they decide that their old school, they want to update their computer system. Oh, we have 100 computers that we want to get rid of. We don't have any use for them. I'm just going to give them to my school. So actually spending money, and our county's system is actually doesn't have as much money as they did this year or next year. It might be better to spend, if not conserve that money, keep spending it. But now that they did spend it, they'll be getting the money back. But it's not right here, right now. It's future. And so the right here, right now is not the main goal and main view. It's what will they do now.
I want to get a parent viewpoint on the data question. And then what we're going to do is we're going to wrap it up. Our experts will stay here so you can pull some more questions for them, but I did want to get a parent input for that particular question.
Yeah, I think
Rebecca.
The more data, the better. And I'm not a technology person. I'm in a kind of un-technology field myself. But I like the fact that there's a lot of available information. And I think it's really interesting with students these days that kids today are completely different from the way that we were, that when we sat in our classrooms with our teachers, we kept our mouths shut and we were hoping our teacher didn't see us. And now the kids not only expect information, they want it to be interesting, they want it to be fun, they want it to be colorful, they want it to be something enjoyable to deal with. So I think the data can be fascinating. I think we have to do is to get our generation to buy into this. It has to look good. It has to be easy to, you know, to access for people who are not technologically driven. But it has to be, you know, I think there needs to be a lot more of it and packaged for all of us as parents, perhaps differently than for the kids.
I think what Deputy Secretary might have been speaking to is, at least in our school and the school system, we use a lot of data to target interventions for students to improve math and reading scores. Our school uses at least half a dozen different indicators to identify this student needs additional support in reading comprehension. And all this is powered by MCLD. One of the really good things that's come out of it is it's forced educators to really examine how they're delivering the curriculum and what do the students need instead of doing the spray and pray approach. We have actually created many different intervention programs at our school where students are receiving additional math or additional reading programs. And so the data that we collect and analyze is important for doing that. And the data is not colorful and fancy like that, but we're trying to muddle through it, and that's how we frame our intervention programs at our school.
As I said, what we're going to do is the panel will obviously stay, and if anyone has some other comments, I just want to wrap up at least this portion, and then there is more input. I'm just absolutely thrilled that you could all be here. I'm actually very excited that I had a student compliment a PowerPoint that I made. You know, that doesn't happen every day. Thank you, Christian. As sort of a sum up on this, you know, when we started this Speak Up National Research Project 4 years ago, we had three goals. One was to collect and report on the authentic, unfiltered feedback, such as we've been getting here today, and what a marvelous two panels we've had. It also was to stimulate some local conversations, and I hope that some of the points that we've brought up here, you can then bring back to your colleagues, to your constituents, to your peers, to the people that you work with, and continue to stimulate some of those conversations around these topics. But then our third objective was really to raise some national awareness on the importance of including these type of voices in the national dialogue, in the regional dialogue, in the local dialogue. And so thank you so much for being part of this with us today and being part of this conversation. And let's give a nice round of applause for all of our experts. And I hope that we'll be able to continue this dialogue. We have provided some information for you in the packets. As I said, we'll be continuing to release more and more of this data over the next couple months. And thank you so much for your time and for your attention to this subject today. We appreciate you being here. Thank you.